This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. So it's not exactly what we dreamt of, and it's not exactly what Eric and Ernie said. But at this moment in time, and I know that we're recording on a Wednesday, but it'll still be true on Friday, Scottish League Two has provided us with the glorious situation that sees East 5 4th, 4 5 5th.
Hey!
I've been waiting for years for something similar to that. I mean, it was going to be the score, wasn't it? That was the Eric and Ernie.
It was going to be East 5 4, 4 5 5 or, vice versa.
East 5 5 4 5 4,
4
yeah.
5 5.
Yeah, but
4.
I think East 5 4th, 4 5 5th is excellent news.
That is excellent news. I hadn't spotted that. That is excellent.
And I've been and looked at it three or four times just to check.
Just to
it's
see if
true.
It was if it would happen. Oh yeah, yeah. So, I've been looking at, insofar as I've looked at Scottish League Two, it's been to see Bonnie Rigg Rose there and see if they might drop out and just be a footnote in history. You know, having just been there for dropping out as soon as I noticed they existed.
Yeah. Well, I saw a thing that's funny. To talk about dropping out and seeing if they existed, I was looking at some article about Scottish attendances and how, you know, obviously Celtic and Rangers have not only held their attendances but have kind of increased them since the early 60s. But looking at the sort of clutch of the next sort of 15 teams, all of whom were getting, you know, fairly decent sort of 14,000, 15,000, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there, of course, you know, fourth or fifth, I think it was, in the list of best attendances in the early 60s was Third Lanark, who disappeared from view in about 63, was it, I think?
In the 60s, yeah, I think.
Yeah. You know, there's your Bonnie Rigg Rose right there.
I guess so, yeah. Hey-ho, well, let's not dwell too much on Scottish teams that have got out of business. I did see one story that I thought of you this week that would have cheered you up, I hope, that filming began on new series of Neighbours. Did you see that?
Yes.
Began
on
the 17th. And some old favourites returning, I gather. Plain Jane Superbrain, who even I remember. And Harold Bishop. But some of the other guys, you know, like Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan and Guy Pearce, they must be going, oh, what, you mean that big reunion finale episode? That was just a big waste of time. Well, you know, don't call me when this one goes tits up.
But you know, Guy Pearce actually basically said that.
Yeah.
He said, oh, well, that was well worth us all getting together then, wasn't it?
I was intrigued by one headline. The headline, actually, that drew me to the news that Neighbours had started filming again was Barton joins cast of Neighbours. I think they surely haven't created a role for a dangerous, philosophising Scouse villain who refers to himself in the third person. But now it turns out it's not Joey Barton. It's Misha Barton, about whom I know very little.
Not me. No, I saw that headline too. And I had to think, he'd have got long odds on that, Joey Barton, wouldn't he? He'd be happy with that as a bet.
Yeah. But if any player was going to do it, was going to make the transition.
He's versatile, certainly.
Yeah, to soap character. It might be him. Yeah. I would have expected it to be in, what was the Scouse one? Hollyoaks.
Yes. I certainly see that. Yeah, or Brookside, indeed.
Yeah, Brookside,
I think I've told you before that my phone thinks that I'm Scottish and it sends me Scottish news all the time, which is why I've already been talking about Scotland quite a lot. But and this is not a football story, but credit to the Edinburgh ultramarathon runner, Jerzy Zawdrzyski. Did you see that?
Who was disqualified
for using her car.
I think in fairness to her, I think she was taken ill and put in a car. And by the time she was well enough to start running again, it had driven 2.5 miles. else. I don't think, looking at the story, that it was like a conscious, thing she'd set up to cheat from the beginning. But I think it was something that she should have mentioned when she got to the end.
Well, she might not have known it was cheating, one. But two, what I found particularly pleasing about it was she still finished third.
Still finished third, yeah. Well, I was reminded of an old cross-country that I took part in at school in a games lesson. It was a games lesson at school. And me and my friend Preggy, Ian Presley, were jogging along at the back of the whole pack when his cousin pulled up alongside in a milk float. And me and Preggy got in the front of this milk float and we're going and made no impact on the race at all. We're just going, if anything, just the same speed. But what happened was, because it was a games lesson and there were lots of lads running, the teacher had sent half of them round the other way, so we were undone when our milk float met the leaders of the other half running towards us. And by the time we got back, we'd been shopped by Andrew Bell, who was a piece of work, whose parents then ended up living next door to mine. So we got a bit of a punishment for that, but it was I felt like it was worth it because we hadn't had to do the run.
You know, and it makes you feel sorry again for the lazy schoolboy these days when there are so few milk floats around to get a lift from.
It's true. I was very entertained by a bit of Match of the Day this week. I like Match of the Day, but there was a particular bit that I had to keep going back and playing again during the Brighton Chelsea game, and not something a diss on Chelsea. We'll have plenty of time for that later. But this was the ball kicked up in the air and came down onto the head of Brighton's estimable centre half, and with perfect timing, just as he headed it, Jonathan Pearce went donk. And it was so perfect that I just went back over and over and over again, and I spent the rest of the match of the day thinking, what would be what other alternatives would there be that would that you could make a pair with of noises with, and lo and behold, there was one in another game later on in the Wolves game when the Korean striker had a shot. The commentator went whang. And I'm sick. I can't wait now for Bright to play Wolves and for it to be donk, whang, donk, whang. like the sound effects of a fight between Reeves and Mortimer, you know.
And Dendonker is another one that could possibly come into the equation. Yes.
That's a slightly more complicated impact, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely. And now, listen, Stoke lost again at home.
I'm sorry.
To Wigan, who are rock bottom.
Who are
of the
bottom,
table,
aren't they? Yeah. And would Wigan have been down if you'd won?
They would, I think. Yeah. It was our 11th home defeat of the season, and that clearly is a lot of home defeats. I mean, I'm speaking to the wrong person, Chris, obviously, because as an Oldham fan...
Well, as an Oldham fan, I'd say we the only reason why we no longer hold the record for having the worst home record since 2008 is that we're not in the league anymore. And otherwise we would. We just sneaked ahead of Sunderland in our last season in the league as the worst, the least fortress-like home venue in the country.
Well, and then it comes back to what we've said time and again. There's always a table somewhere you're top
of. We're top of, yeah. I seek them out for interest.
Somebody's top of, I mean, almost certainly. Hmm. Anyway, I just wanted to use this platform, and it's perhaps it's not the right place, I don't know. But I'd like to use this platform to extend an open invitation to attend the Bet365 for a home game to any of the following people. Just Stop Oil. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Extinction Rebellion, the Suffragette Movement, the Chartist, Wat Tyler and the Peasants' Revolt. Anyone, in fact, who can stop the pain of our home performances by forcing an abandonment. That's what I would...
Did you see the guy who jumped on the snooker table and covered it in yellow powder, whatever
I only
there,
saw
whatever
the result of that.
Yeah. I just thought, just to stop a game at Stoke, you're going to need a lot of blokes with powder to make the impact on a football pitch that he made on the snooker table.
I think if you want to find a ground with a lot of blokes with powder, Stoke may well be it, to tell you the honest truth.
Another thing I thought might amuse you that I saw this week, for your CR7 Living with Lionel Messi sitcom. Did you see that? Apparently there was a thing. There was a thing in the paper. How is this in the paper? Apparently, Cristiano Ronaldo has taken to painting his toenails black. Is that it's like a single episode storyline? What is that? Or is that a title sequence? What is that? Lionel comes in and into the bathroom to clean his teeth and finds Cristiano painting his toenails black. I mean, what the hell is going on there?
I can only think that what might have happened is that Cristiano has had his big toe stamped on and it has gone black. And he thought, well, that's not right. Yeah, I can't have just one black one. And he's gone for the full amount.
Well, there you are. You see that in the second half of the episode. That's the explanation. And Lionel is so relieved.
It's Cristiano and Lionel are competing for football's fanciest feat. But unfortunately, Cristiano
being followed by foot fetishists.
Cristiano doesn't realise it's feet spelt F-E-A-T.
FIFA's football feats. Yes. For award. Yeah. Do you see that? Also, Ronaldo got Al Nassr's manager the sack. This week, and that only took him 3 months to get the manager the sack, to fall out with the manager, and he really ought really to be bringing the boss home for dinner unexpectedly, but that's a big dog's time. And he wants Al Nassr to get Jose Mourinho, bless him. But meanwhile, Messi was also in the news saying that he won't go back to, but they're talking of him going back to Barcelona. How they'll afford him is another thing, but he won't go back if Gerard Piqué is there. Because they've fallen out, apparently, over a backstabbing issue. But there's an episode. Cristiano lines Piqué up as the new boss and invites him round to dinner without telling Lionel, who's cooking his special paella, with hilarious consequences.
Consequences, yes. I'm not sure that Lionel will necessarily be doing a paella. He may be doing some sort of steak thing.
Maybe.
It's the Argentinian thing.
Or
how
about this? Opening up a big Frey Bentos pie.
Yes, that's now we're there. This stuff writes itself.
It does, yeah, it does. Anyway, as if things weren't going badly enough at Chelsea, we'll come back to Chelsea, but I was enchanted by the thing that happened when Brighton brought on Danny Welbeck and the Stamford Bridge Electronic School Board announced that Cody Gakpo was coming on. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, which was news to everyone. And apparently the Brighton fans were singing, Cody Gakpo, he's one of our own, which I like very much. And also, if Gakpo scores, we're on the pitch. And he did score, of course. He didn't, or rather Danny Welbeck did. Yeah. I think Cody Gakpo, he's found his ideal home at Liverpool, hasn't he? I mean, you only have to hear Jamie Carragher talk about him to know that he is the most Scouse footballer since Jamie Carragher himself. Yeah, or maybe Jerzy Dudek. Cody Gakpo, he's at Liverpool and he's ecstatic.
So I think, while we're on Chelsea, and last night Chelsea...
Let's do Chelsea, go on.
Yeah, let's do Chelsea, because, it's the it's the great big blue elephant in the room, isn't it, at the moment. After Bowley, I mean, we talked last week about Bowley's, we're going to win 3-0 prediction, which, is a schoolboy error of massive proportions.
Massive, fate-tempting proportions, yes.
Yes. And then of course... there's been much talk about Lampard, and I loved his denial that Chelsea were broken, because Chelsea being broken, that doesn't mean anything anyway. So what to say? No. I think saying we're broken is going too far. Yeah. What other adjectives are you going to put in there?
We're
in
not
between?
Broken. We're just a bit shit. Todd Bowley, bless him. I mean, he arrived with let's face it, the sort of self-promoting nickname, idea that he was the cleverest man in the room. That was his thing. That is why he's so rich. He's got so rich by being the cleverest man in the room.
Yeah, and he lives alone, doesn't he?
But with the best man in the world, Chelsea's not the hardest place to be the cleverest man in the room. But anyway, he's been going into the dressing room, where maybe he is the cleverest man, but telling the players after the Brighton game that the performance was embarrassing. Apparently, he and the other owners were in there for an hour for an hour talking to the players, saying that they're losing 2-1 at home to Brighton, who are higher in the table than them and a better team, was embarrassing. And if you think that's embarrassing, you know, wait till he turns up with Smithy off of Gavin and Stacey to give you all a pep talk. Right?
Yeah. Well, you've got to presume he was in there an hour, because by the time you've translated embarrassing into the 19 different languages that you need to get it across to the players and explained it in context, it's going to take you an hour, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was interesting that Lampard afterwards was at great pains to say, "Yeah, I'm comfortable with that, with the owner going in, and you know, I had my say, and then the owner had his, you know, and that's perfectly fine." You can almost hear the teeth being gritted, can't you? Almost. Yeah. And Kepa, the goalkeeper, because you're never going to forget what position he plays, are you? But it's desperate. He was desperate to suggest that the owner coming in and talking to the players is normal. No, this is normal. This happens all the time. He comes in, you know, they have this. It shouldn't be, is the point. It shouldn't be normal.
Well, it shouldn't be normal. And not only that, I mean, quite apart from the fact that, you know, what right does he have, you know, and how does it affect the manager, and what's his status in terms of his influence and what happens on the pitch, you know, all that sort of stuff. You're going into a place where people are in their pants, and I just think that that's a strange thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit like, I want a word with you, Gaffer. I'm just going to the toilet. No, it's right, I'll come in with you.
It's
very strange. Man. I don't imagine he goes into the Chelsea women's dressing room and says things like that. And also, how vulnerable are you going to feel anyway? You're dressing down by your boss when you're just wearing a jockstrap and one sock.
Well, yes, exactly. You're getting a dressing down when you're about as dressed down as you're going to be.
How much do you want the shirt off my back? I'm not even wearing a shirt. I'd like to think that other people that finance things, you know, because Bowley's basically, he's financing Chelsea, isn't he? I mean, okay, that means he's the owner. But it's a bit like, you know, people do that for plays. You know, they're called angels, and they put in money to help put productions on.
Yes.
I can't imagine having the right, by doing that, of being able to barge into Maureen Lipman's dressing room afterwards and tell her that, frankly, she was just embarrassing.
No, especially if she's in her pants.
Exactly so. It seemed a very strange thing to
me. The story became, didn't it, about Bowley bawling out one player in particular.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, yeah. And the reports were all that it was a mystery player who was apparently a senior player, one that Bowley himself bought for big bucks within the last 12 months. So, you know, could be anyone, but played badly against Brighton. So, you know, again, could be anyone. Bought last summer, apparently, as there was the report. So before the most recent spree of 8-year contracts. And the mystery player has been disillusioned and sulking in training. So still, you know, a little difficult to spot. But the really, you know, really, it narrows down to it's Raheem Sterling. That's what it narrows down to. It was Raheem Sterling. And Raheem Sterling, not picked for the Real Madrid second leg, when Lampard did the really peculiar thing of playing two number 10s. I mean, I don't really buy into the idea that you can have two number 10s, but there are two number 10s. There were Gallagher, who, fair enough, is an attacking midfielder, and Kante. Kante playing basically off the striker, and the striker being a false nine anyway. It's a bizarre idea. When you've got on the bench, he had Sterling, who, in fairness, was probably still sulking, but also Pulisic and Mudrik, who they've spent 80 million on, and Ziyech, who's not bad, and Mount, who's great, and Pulisic, who's a runner with the ball, a threat, you know. And he played Kante, who's arguably their best player at the moment, but, you know, the best defensive midfielder in the country, and suddenly he's asked to play up front, you know, almost.
Well, the weird thing was, it worked in the sense that Real Madrid took a long time to work out what was happening, but it didn't work in the sense that the two best chances fell to Kante and Cucurella.
Yes.
Although, given Chelsea's recent form, it wouldn't really have mattered who they'd fallen to. I also take issue with the idea that you can have been at a club for less than a year and be a senior player.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you arrive as a senior player, I guess, don't you? I mean, the thing that worried me about Bowley balling out, as is the American phrase, Raheem Sterling, was that he was pictured before, at the end of the Brighton game, but before he went into the dressing room, being harangued by fans from the tier above where he sits.
Yes.
And there was a photograph of them making their, you know, almost certainly over-emotional and cretinous points, and Bowley listening and taking these things on board and then going into the dressing room and, you know, and deciding to have a go at Sterling because someone, you know, possibly because someone in the crowd, or maybe James Corden, has told him that Raheem Sterling is a weak link and letting him down. You know, yeah. I'd be very worried if I was Frank Lampard about Todd Bowley bringing things he's heard from the crowd into the dressing room straight after the game. I think that's a recipe for disaster.
I'd rather pictured him actually leaving the dressing room and then taking the sign off the door and going, how many times? Locker room! It's a fucking locker room! But just a couple of things I noticed this week, looking various things up. In 19 seasons under Abramovich, they never lost three games in a row. Okay, they've lost three games in a row four times this season.
Right. And four games in a row just now, yeah.
Okay. Manchester City, in this calendar year, have scored 101 more goals than Chelsea. That is staggering. 155 to 54.
So you mean in the last 12 months? Yeah.
Yeah, 12 months. Yeah. Yeah, 12 months. Yeah. Arsenal have made 28 changes to their starting 11 this season.
Right.
Which may be turning out to be a problem for them.
Yeah.
They're the lowest. They made the fewest changes to their starting 11. Chelsea have changed their starting 11, and we're talking player by player here, not occasions, 112 times.
Yikes.
Okay. And Frank Lampard, who Todd Bowley has, appointed because Smithy told him to, has lost 15 of the last 17 games he's managed.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. And you see, I feel a little bit sorry for Frank Lampard just because, you know, he's lost four games, but two of them are against Real Madrid, who are the European champions. And they've only lost those 2-0, and which is, you know, which is not bad for the team that are 11th in the Premier League.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. I'm just saying, it isn't so much what Frank Lampard's done. It's just the strangeness of the appointment. Just really is a strange, strange, strange thing.
But it's been
done.
A balmy club for a little while, hasn't it? I mean, I saw that Didier Drogba's comment last night was that I don't recognise my club. But they've been sacking managers all the time he was there. And it's just the same, only more so, isn't it? I mean, it's a bit like saying you don't recognise your dad because he's grown a moustache, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the final thing is, of course, because of their league position and now being knocked out of the Champions League, they're talking about buying players like Osimhen and although Napoli got knocked out as well, too.
Yeah.
Players like Osimhen and bringing managers in. Well, you know, managers, because they know they're only going to have a year, don't want to come if they're not in the Champions League because, you know, managers are so, they're already looking at their next appointment in the way that we laud clubs, well, some clubs like Brighton, for instance, for preparing for their next managerial change whilst the incumbent is doing really, really well for, you know, keeping their antenna going, you know, if you see what I mean. Managers do the same thing, you know, and they're going to think, well, how much of an impact can I make at Chelsea when they're not in the Champions League? And so it's going to be very, very strange.
Well, apparently Chelsea have interviewed Nagelsmann and they've interviewed Enrique. And both of those men have also been interviewed at Spurs. And, you know, it's hard to avoid the feeling that they're looking to see if Spurs get into the Champions League, then they're going to be the better option. And
well,
if they don't,
right.
then maybe I'll try and rebuild Chelsea rather than go into the Europa Conference Vanarama League.
Yeah, you know. And the pattern we've seen in the past is that they go to Chelsea first and then they go to Spurs, isn't it? I mean, there's
that
three
is
or
a
four.
Pattern, yeah.
There's Villas-Boas and
but then we're breaking the pattern mould, aren't we, this season? Anyway, that's enough about them. It's the Cup semi-finals. We're up for the Cup this weekend. City against Sheffield United, Man United against Brighton. So obviously football fans everywhere looking forward to a stripe-on-stripe final, however much commentators will try to make you believe that people want to see another fucking Manchester derby. Because it's on ITV, and ITV have a way of fucking everything up, and look at Men Behaving Badly or the later career of Desmond Lynham. The final is apparently going to form part of a blockbuster doubleheader. Their words, not mine. And when I saw this, I had a moment, you know, first of outrage at the thought of the cup final being part of a doubleheader with anything other than cup final, it's a knockout. And then wondering what the other head could possibly be. Maybe a heat of World's Strongest Man or some log rolling from Canada. But no, it has been pushed back by Qatar, as has the Premier League finale, of course. And the cup final is due on Saturday, June the 3rd. Which is the same day as the derby.
I knew you were going to say the derby.
Yeah, bloody horse racing. I hate horse racing. Not from an animal rights protester point of view, but because so many of my formative summers watching Test cricket, it was the coverage would go away because we're going to go to the racing. And then, But the FA haven't even, because of the derby, the FA haven't even committed to a kickoff time and saying they won't until the two finalists are known. What difference that's going to make, I wonder. I mean, Brighton could get through. I hope they do, which is a fairly easy jaunt to Wembley. But at least one of the finalists is going to be from the north, so they have to consider late train times back up north. But I don't know that that is what they're considering. And what if both Manchester clubs are involved? What difference is a kickoff time going to make to that? Because it's not going to be at 3 o'clock, which it should be, which would work for everyone, because the derby starts at 4:30. And that would mean going away from the cup final to the horse racing.
But just imagine, ITV are going to be knee-deep in sperm if it's Manchester City versus Manchester United, because it's going to be the double derby.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it? That's what it's going to be, double derby day.
Double derby day. Double dick
double
derby day.
Yes.
They're waiting for is, they're hoping for, because they're TV people, they're hoping for a Manchester derby so that they can bump it to prime time, so that they won't want to start straight after the derby. They'll want it to be in the middle of the evening. And my feeling is that they won't want to piss off Simon Cowell for Brighton Sheffield United, you know. But if it's the Manchester derby, it's going to be 7:45, 8 o'clock, you know.
Oh dear!
I mean, it's particularly stressful for me, this one, because I'm due to attend a family memorial service on June the 3rd, and when I said I would go, it didn't occur to me that the cup final could be in June. It just didn't occur to me, and it's not a football mad branch of the family, not one that's going to have a screen at the memorial with the cup final on it. So I'm doomed to slip away during pork pie and strawberries part of the festivities to try and find a pub in Doncaster with the game on, just a nightmare.
Depressing. Mind you, it'd be interesting to be in Doncaster watching it if Sheffield United get there. And I think on form, Brighton might just have the Indian sign over Manchester United for this weekend.
I hope so.
Well, let's take a break to ponder those very things.
Anyway, let us take a short break from discussion of a league whose pundit-predicted outcome is largely predicated on the assumption that one or other of the two front-runners will win all of their remaining games, and swing our critical gaze onto a place where a couple of spawny wins in a row means you get the bunting out of the loft and buy a season ticket for more of the same next time. I speak, of course, of the Vanarama, the National League Conference tier thing, where my team, Oldham Athletic, seem to be hauling themselves out of the relegation equation in recent weeks by scrapping their way past a few of the teams around them. The relegation mix, however, has been turned on its head in dramatic fashion lately, as two of the teams who seemed more or less doomed only a month ago, Gateshead and Torquay, have won five, count them, both of them, five games in a row to put the shits up at least a third of the league, some of whom have not been reacting all that impressively, it has to be said. Oldham's opponents on Saturday were Maidenhead United for the game styled the Flat Cap Derby. Our eccentric chairman, Frank Rothwell, who has inspired a copycat fashion following amongst the Latics faithful, against Magpies manager Alan Devonshire, who has done the same for several years down in Berkshire. Now, Devonshire's boys have been sitting mid-table comfortably most of the season, looking loftily above the fray. But they came to Boundary Park needing at least another result to steer clear of calamity. And Oldham notched in the third minute of the game through Alex Reid, who was the sort of striker that people like because he runs about a lot, even though this was only his third actual goal. For me, this was the start of another lovely afternoon in the exasperating company of veteran co-commentator Uncle Roy Butterworth, who was in the middle of reading out a text message saying, "They can hear us in the United States!" when the goal went in. And then afterwards complained that he'd been interrupted. Bless him. He's a character, you know. But anyway, Maidenhead needed a reaction and never really put one together. They had the look of a team sleepwalking into a crisis and only really threatened once we reached the last 10 minutes or so with the score still 1-0. And David Unsworth, as he always seems to do, pulled everyone back into defence and invited the opposition to have a go. Took off both strikers and our main playmaker, replaced them all with defensive midfielders, and there we were, once again, with minutes to go, taking tippy-tappy short corners to ourselves, trying to run down the clock, instead of trying to score a second against a team that hadn't threatened us at all. And sure enough, they finally had a couple of shots, as they were cordially invited to do. But fortunately, Latics held on this time. If only it usually worked, it wouldn't be so frustrating. But we have shipped 17 points to late goals this season and let in more than one goal after the 80th minute on six occasions, six times, two goals in the 80th somethingth minute. So fucking pack it in. Anyway, on Tuesday night, we welcome Southend United. And what a welcome we gave them. We gave them the ball for most of the game. And we gave them first use as well of our refurbished floodlights so they could see what they were doing with it. I was watching on the National League TV streaming thing. It was amazing. Last time I'd watched a Tuesday game, the lights were so bad you could barely even see the far side of the field. Just silhouettes moving in front of the illuminated advertising hoardings, which were super bright, presumably, in the hope that that would compensate somehow. I was convinced that one of the reasons we were struggling so badly in the league was that some of our players were actually out of focus. But anyway, last night, it was so bright. The colours, the blues, the yellows, the green of the pitch, still not as green as it might be, but wait till we get our new one in the summer. It's going to be amazing. I mean, that's one of the things about the floodlit game. It was the brightness of it, the spectacle of it. We haven't had that for years. But last night, and apparently $30,000 a pylon they've spent on, really? You know, on the bulbs.
They sponsored your new floodlights. I was thinking Oldham Tanning Studio.
No,
possibly.
I think they're done by yes. No, I think they're a donation by our eccentric owner, which is great. Oh. It's good for him. And now he needs the flat cap to keep the lights out of his eyes. But yeah. Anyway. The game itself was one of those ones, you know, not quite as extreme as that brilliant Barcelona-Celtic game years ago, where one team has all the play and puts together all the decent moves and looks like they must surely score sooner rather than later, but then the other team wins. Then Southend's goalkeeper faffed about on the edge of his area just before half-time, gave the ball to Alex Reid, who slid it into an empty net, and which made their centre-half jump up and down on the spot in fury. like Violet Elizabeth Bott in Just William, you know, Bonnie Langford. Just,
Did he have a little cloud above his head with seethe written on it?
Yes. And spirals and hashtag things and lightning bolts to replace his swearing. Yes. And then in the second half, Oldham had one coherent move of note and scored a second goal. And somehow now we have three wins and three clean sheets in a row and are closer to the playoffs than the relegation zone. Thinking about all those late points that we've thrown away by failing to shut up shop. We could, you know, another couple of wins and we'd be in with a shout. You know, we'd be where Southend are if we'd had another couple of wins. That's all. So there we are. That's a season blown.
You see, still, because I'm struggling. I've got through all the particular stages of working out quite where you are. And still, when you say with another couple of wins, we could be where Southend are, still find that a very upsetting thing to hear to say. That hurts. I mean, Stoke, we had this really strange march where we were just a completely different team and won 5-1 at Sunderland and 4-0 at Coventry and beat Blackburn 3-2, and we seemed full of goals, etc., etc., etc. And we came into April with this great run of games, three home games and one away in the first four games of this month, and we've lost all three of the home games, and we drew the away one 0-0, and we have been abject, absolutely abject. But still, you know, you can always take something away from it, can't you? So so Ben Pearson, for instance, was sent off against West Brom for West Brom were doing some shithousery at the end, trying to waste time, and they had a throw in. And so he threw the ball at the thrower, who pretended he couldn't catch it. So he threw it at him again, and he pretended he couldn't catch it. And then he was sent off, but not without. And I was, if it's true, I love this because I've never heard this word before. He was sent off, but not without calling the referee a fucking thunder cunt.
Okay. This is why they should be mic'd up. This is why.
I mean, just brilliant. I mean, the first part of his insult to the referee, not so good. Hmm. I suppose you'll be travelling home on the West Brom bus. You know, that's classic. You know, wear your glasses stuff. Yeah. But you fucking thunder cunt, I have to say, it's very,
hands
very
off.
Pleasing. Yeah. The referee, Andy Woolmer, who strangely enough has been taken off refereeing duties for this weekend, was appalling. I mean, that wasn't the reason we lost, but he was absolutely appalling. We ended up having 21 minutes added on.
Yikes.
Over the whole game.
World Cup style.
Well, yeah, World Cup style, but also took me into, and I know that you don't like it, took me straight to the National. You know, yeah. The Grand National was on straight after. Ben Wilmot was broke his back, fractured his back in the
game.
Yes,
I saw that, yeah.
And this was one of these fouls in rugby union, and heaven knows an awful lot, you can get away with an awful lot in rugby union, but this is a straight sending off, is playing a man in the air. Mm. You know, you jump in for something, but you push them when they're in the air. And obviously, there's no way of righting yourself.
Yeah, so he just came down flat on his back.
He just came down flat on his back. It was absolutely terrible. No free kick, of course. Absolutely terrible. So yeah, life, not a lot of fun, certainly for Ben Wilmot and definitely for Stoke fans in general. But I did think about you because I saw that this weekend Grimsby are safe now from going down.
Yeah.
Which means that since 1987, when automatic promotion from the conference, Vamarama, whatever you want to call it, National League, became automatic, 53 teams have gone up and none have been relegated in their first season up. So there's something to for you to aim for, Chris, in a couple of years' time.
Well, it used to be a thing that, I mean, obviously it's, we're cooked this season already now, but it used to be a thing that when they first introduced automatic relegation, and it was only one team, that team would bounce back quite often. I think Colchester did it, Darlington did it. But in recent years, I think in the last 15, 20 years, I think it's only happened three times that teams have gone straight back up. And Grimsby were one last year when they had that incredible playoff win, didn't they, over Wrexham?
Yeah, yeah.
The 5-4 with Deezer Riverway scoring. But it's actually not, it's more common, you know, naturally, statistically, that players, that teams will go down, end up in the playoffs and then not win the playoffs. I think Bristol Rovers won the playoffs and Grimsby won the playoffs and Cheltenham won the title. But other than that, it's been almost as common for teams to drop straight through, like Scunthorpe have done.
Scunthorpe, absolutely.
Yeah. And talking about Grimsby, actually, there was an interesting article, did you see, in The Guardian by Jason Stockwell, the chairman of Grimsby and a tech enthusiast, speculating on the possible future applications of AI in football. And it's all gone a bit quiet on this recently. We did a thing, didn't we, a long time ago about the Soccerbot 360.
Norwich City.
I think the best thing about it is its name. It's hard to tell whether it's made much of an impact on their game. I mean, they haven't run away with the championship, have they, Norwich, by any means? I mean, they're on the fringe of the playoffs, aren't they, I think? But, I mean, you can already see how the AI chat GPT thing could be used to simulate and even replace, you know, Danny Murphy or Jermaine Gina, say, you know, just program it to say he should have scored there, job done. You know, Gary Lineker's curious closing gags and his political utterances may be a little more complicated. But Jason Stockwell, though, is not talking about cheap shots like that. he's clearly a better man than I am. What we're talking about is the world of marginal gains, actual on-field advantages. And, you know, it's not just in training. I mean, you wouldn't make yourself a Mr. Data and get him to put out the cones, would you? But a lot of clubs have data scientists, as we know, and analysts working on getting an edge in areas like recruitment and player performance and match analysis and designing training. But he believes, Jason Stockwell believes, that AI is already being used to deal with the mountain of data that's available all the time, and to use it in real time in matches behind the scenes at clubs like Brighton and Brentford for their money ball approach, for their getting ready for, as you were saying earlier on, for preparing to who might be the next manager.
Identifying managers and players. Yeah.
And Liverpool have recently announced a collaboration with something called DeepMind, which I think that was a chess computer, wasn't it?
Either a chess computer or was it in Hitchhiker's Guide.
Exactly. to combine computer vision, statistical learning, game theory, yeah. Isn't it?
It's just going to be Jurgen Klopp coming into his press conference on a Friday and going, 27.
But he envisages, Jason Stockwell, 10 years down the line, coaches having an AI assistant to help them actually with things like changing formations during a game to react to match situations and substitutions. And, you know, and also we'll all be flying around in little rocket cars like on the Jetsons and getting fired by fax.
Yeah. So, I mean, a couple of the things that he mentioned in the article, which you pointed me at, actually, was if a goalkeeper is more likely to drop the ball in the first 10 minutes, then you need to be running crosses. My favourite one was that AI could pick up something in a player's eye that told you he was getting tired in the 73rd minute.
Or the vision is so particular that it can actually diagnose symptoms of a player's well-being in real time during a game, and tell the manager to hook him, you know.
Yeah, or to bring on a substitute to play against him.
Yes. There's a weakness at fullback, so bring on a left winger. Maybe that explains what happened to Davinson Sanchez, you know, the weekend.
Maybe AI saw
something going on there with him.
Well, he was treated very shoddily, I thought, by the Spurs fans and by the manager. I like the whole AI thing. I have no idea what it means. I don't know where AI starts and where it finishes. Yeah. Because there's data, isn't there?
There's data in this computer, but AI kind of suggests a presence, doesn't it? Another presence, an artificial intelligence, like whether that's a computer that speaks to you, or whether that's, you know, it's someone in a tracksuit, you know, android in a tracksuit.
So ultimately, will we see computers being sacked?
Yeah. Well, what you have to worry about, I think, is if you get relegated and the chairman, Todd Bowley, sacks your AI coach, and then it goes, I'll be back. That's what you have to worry about. The next thing you know, your toaster's out to get you and everyone's heading for the bunkers, you know.
You really don't want to do that, Todd. Yeah. Todd, you Todd, really don't yeah, want exactly. to do that.
Yeah. What are you doing, Todd?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd like to finish off by just I've been thinking a lot about my dad this week. My dad's not very well, and I was just thinking about the wonderful thing of going. I mean, we both went with our granddads, I think, to football to start.
Yes.
But I'd like to celebrate just very quickly, because I don't think my dad ever really liked football, you know, and he used to take me an awful lot.
Yeah.
Which
was
very, very generous of him. The volunteers and the lift givers and the takers, and just a thumbs up to dads and to uncles and to granddads that take you to the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how football is passed on, isn't it, to future generations. These are the things that need to be continuing, like Patrick Barkley's grandfather dropping him off at the turnstiles when he was eight, and then driving away saying, "I'll see you at full time."
But also, of course, you know, when we were young, here we go. That's the only way you could see a live game was to go, and therefore you needed to be taken, you know, or dropped off in Patrick Barkley's case.
Yes. And kids today, they don't know they're born, do they?
They don't know they're born.
Apparently, the next TV deal will have 60 more live games available.
Oh my God. Do we want to do Manchester United takeover, or are we going to just keep letting it fly?
No, I mean, let it go. It's just continued trolling, isn't it, from the Glazers? Oh, we're going to sell, or are we in fact, softening up American investment houses to prop them up and keep them in charge? I was interested in the bid from this fella Thomas Ziliakis. Did you come across him? He's the Finnish entrepreneur.
He's going to come out, didn't he?
Yeah. No. Well, he was very annoyed that there was a third round of bidding, but he's made it clear in the last couple of days that he hasn't pulled out, that his bid stands from the second time. And the interesting thing about him was that he has this pie in the sky plan. There we are. It's undermined it before I've even said what it is. But he wants to own 50% of the club and have fans own 50% of the club, which, oh, man. but there was a poll, not a very scientific poll, on the internet, where a lot of Manchester United fans favour that approach over the being owned by a sheikh, or being taken over by Sir Jim Ratcliffe, or being part financed by an American financial institution and still run by the Glazers. And so Ziliakis is in a place where his bid is not likely to be picked up, because it's not as much money, but it's making all the others look bad.
I mean, of course, to say that a lot of Manchester United fans back that is a bit like saying young people in 1977 like the song "If the Kids Are United" because it sounded like we were all together, man.
And it had the word "kids" in the title.
So I like the fact there was a fin and a pole in one of your sentences. That pleased me an awful lot.
Donk.
It's like the longest ever game of pass the parcel, isn't it? Where you keep thinking the next time you unwrap it, that the prize is going to be there, or the decision is going to be there. But no, it's just endless pieces of paper being thrown in the air, and no one is any further forward.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's a prolonged trolling is occurring, I think.
Yeah,
where the Glazers know that they're unpopular and want to glory in it. Rub people's noses in it.
Yes, and that's what I like to think that we do here on this programme. All right, that's us for this week. And just always remember, kids, East 5 4th, 4 5 5th. Sports Social Podcast Network.